And we have our continuing show on vaccinations, whether you should or shouldn't, that's up to you. Dr. Robin Falkov, and we'll be joined in just a moment with Dr. Andrew Molden right here on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, now we're joined with Dr. Andrew Molden, developer of BrainGuard, a non-invasive neurovascular imaging protocol, enhanced measurement, imaging, and diagnostic tools for neurologists and hematologists, and he currently holds the prestigious position of research scientist for Bright Steps Forward, a not-for-profit company. And here he is, Dr. Andrew Molden, along with Robin Falkov. Hello, doctor. How are you?
Very fine, George. It's a pleasure to be on your show, even though 2 o'clock in the morning.
Welcome.
You'll get used to it. We're going to call you every week to get you on from here on in.
I love that. The society needs the information we have to share with them imminently, as you are well aware.
Robin, tell us a little bit about Dr. Andrew Molden.
Dr. Molden is quite impressive. He's a medically trained doctor, a PhD-trained neuroscientist, neuropsychologist, and he has a master's degree in child language neurodevelopment. What I have seen of his work, the photographs that he has on his website, vaccinetruth.com, these are heartbreaking images where he points out so clearly the evidence of damage to children from vaccination with little slight changes in the alignment of their eyes, the positioning of features on the face, expressive lines, all of these things that I believe he is the first person to document and put together. And his research is just as clear as can be when you look at this and the effect on the immune system when these toxic substances are put into the body. And he will explain it the
all
best.
Right. And Dr. Molden, do you think, for example, some of these vaccines are responsible for autistic children?
I don't think. I conclusively know. In fact, the most recent February 2009 omnibus autism test case they ran through the Federal Circuit Courts, they have about 5,000 families trying to sue the government for alleged claims that the vaccinations have induced neurodevelopmental disorders, including autism in their children. But one of the prime cases that came through this past February, the case of Michelle Cedillo. Now, Michelle's case has been through the news in many spheres throughout the past several years. And the vaccine courts concluded that the family failed to establish causation in the case of Michelle Cedillo for how vaccines have caused autism in her case. And the lawyers focused primarily on mercury, and unfortunately, as it turns out, mercury is just kind of like fuel to the fire here. But with the imaging we now do to measure the neurological damages that were, in some respects, before our very eyes all along, Michelle Cedillo has these specific neurological damages that all autistic children do, that pretty much most of the cases that the federal courts have said, yes, we did cause brain damages and litigated in favor of the families, they didn't call it autism, they called it brain damage. Well, all these children, including Hannah Pauling, including Jenny McCarthy's son, Evan McCarthy. We even went back and imaged and looked at Jet Travolta. They all show exactly the same things. But the point here, George, it's not just autism. We see the same exact measurable, quantifiable, reproducible in the here and now, and retrospectively, we can go back 10, 50 years ago, if people have pictures, neurological damages that induced by any vaccines causing the same damages for Gulf War syndrome, for Gardasil death, for ADHD, for specific learning disabilities, for sudden death, alleged shaken baby syndrome. It's across the gamut. And it's sad because we actually went back and looked at polio and even the pre-vaccine era, where polio virus was inducing in the body to do something in response to these foreign triggers to the immune system that was leading to exactly the same damages. We never got rid of the problem. We took forest fires for 1% of the population, weakened it down, put them in needles, sold them for profit, injected them in all of us, and said, congratulations, yeah, we got rid of these things.
Do any vaccines work, in your opinion?
That's a great question. Work is work needs a clearer definition. I can say conclusively that all vaccines are doing really is dampening down a specific response in the immune system to that particular bug or germ or toxin, but it also at the same time as well, they've designed them to accelerate the non-specific immune response, and that's what's actually causing the damages from the pre-vaccine era and to now. So they don't work. They're poisons, period, end of story.
You would not get any, I take it.
I coming through Western medicine trained, I would have accepted the same training that my colleagues have. We take these things on good faith that the information we're taught in medical school is based on sound science. And in some ways, the science can be used to convince you that these things are all good. But once you have the clinical data as a clinically trained clinician, and you're seeing that does not jive with what you're actually seeing in firsthand experiences with the patients and what you can measure and what you've been told in school, you have to go back to literature and find out why is there this disconnect. And when you do that, you find out, well, hold the phone here. Oh my gosh, we've missed something big. And this is not the germs causing this. This is the body's own response to repeat foreign things put into it. And it was always there. We never knew what we were looking at. So I'll get no vaccines at all now.
Tell me about the origins of the swine flu, in your opinion.
You're taking me outside of my realm of comfort. my work right now is before the United States Federal Circuit Courts, and for all vaccines are causing exactly the same neurological damage. So, George, unfortunately, I have to walk a very straight, narrow path. If I deviate even to any realm of speculation,
they're going to get you.
They'll tear me apart and take away what I do know, and I can't show empirically that they're found.
I understand.
May I ask you, what are your thoughts on where that came from?
I think it was made in a laboratory.
I believe you.
And it got loose intentionally or otherwise, probably otherwise, but I think they were trying to concoct something, and out it came.
Well, you go back and look at history here, and well, even recent history, even Baxter's folly here of accidentally,
yeah.
In some countries, even where I grew up in Canada, in some places where people are looking for jobs for the summer, they go set fires so they could work for the volunteer fire department. And society's no different. If people are starving and strapped for cash, well, if you can make something that can make a demand for everybody needs to buy something from you, some people will do that. It's not conspiratorial. It's just somebody's trying to make a living.
Robin, are they still trying to control the supplements that we try to take?
Yes, they're trying to control the supplements. There was a witch hunt launched by the FDA where they threatened to come after all websites that were claiming to have treatments for swine flu. They were threatening that there would be lawsuits against these websites. They wanted the only treatments to be Tamiflu and Relenza. And as you have brought up before, there are now resistant cases of flu to those drugs, which are supposedly their only answer. So it's a very concerted effort to try to limit the public's access to information. And fortunately, we have you, George.
Well, as long as I can keep fighting the good fight for us, that's the important thing. Dr. Molden, tell us about BrainGuard.
Sure. In 2001, coming out of medical school, with my background training, every possible means we have in contemporary science to look at the functions of the human brain, I've had my hands in it through all my years of academia. I was a national scholar, graduating valedictorian to the bachelor's, master's, PhD, not because I'm a bright chap by any means, because I for some reason fell in love with truly the forensics of understanding brain function and physiology. But coming out of medical school, armed with the training of the medical doctors have and knowing what their clinical skills now are, and I passed their exam, so I have the same skills that the most medical doctors do. But I also had a PhD training in clinical neuropsychology. So before I even chose to step back and go into medical school after the PhD and after a master's in child neurodevelopment, I knew what was normal in neurological function. And the doctors, the medical doctors at that time, would refer their patients to me and ask for my expertise. Dr. Molden, do you think there's an organic brain problem here? Well, I had skills and training that the medical doctors did not have. But after going through medical school, I also had the training and skills of the medically trained physicians. And when I sat there and got to the medical wards and started seeing the patients the medical doctors do, I said, wait a minute here. I know what the medical doctors know and don't know relative to the brain functions. I know what the PhD doctors know and don't know. And I also knew what both don't know and assume the other guy doesn't know. I was sitting right in the middle, so wait a minute, guys. This is looking you right in the face, and because you're not talking to each other, you cannot see that these features you're seeing in the children's and adults and teens' faces, where the eye deviates in slightly or the eye deviates out or the corner of the mouth goes flat, we call it a flattening of the nasal labial fold, or the eye blinks become out of sync. These are four things you can see. But knowing what the neurological exam was and how to measure, in medicine and science, it's important that you always measure something to ensure that something's safe or not. So, for example, if I never measured death as an adverse outcome from general surgery or from anesthesia, I can say that all surgical procedures are 100% safe. But if relative to all these vaccines, we never knew what to measure. And because of that, we assumed that they were all safe. But the neurological damages I quantified are the standard clinical neurological exam measured before and after a vaccine. By analogy again, if I x-ray your arm, it's not broken, then I hit it with a baseball bat, x-rayed again, it's broken. We never measured neurological integrity before vaccination, and we never brought children or Gulf War vets or teen girls or anyone back afterwards to see if the neurological damages had changed. Measurement before and after is within subject's design, and that pulled the data out and said, oh my gosh, we're causing strokes, and that's exactly what these are.
Now, here's something that you may or not be aware of or you've studied, but the Gulf War syndrome, for example, that our vets came back from the first Gulf War. Do you think that happened because of the vaccinations?
I recognize that there were many things they were exposed to, but I can tell you this conclusively. Conclusively, the Gulf War vets post-vaccination are showing exactly the same measurable neurological impaired blood flow damages as I see after DTP in children who die of sudden infant death, who I see in DTP-induced autism or learning disabilities or ADHD or Gardasil. It's all the same damages, but depending when you whack the blood supply in the body in development, it'll dictate to a certain degree the type of symptoms that comes out. An infant's brain is immature from neurodevelopment as well as the, we call it arborization, the branching networks of the blood vessels is different in an infant and an immature brain. So you damage it 2 months or 18 months of age. The symptom profile there will be much different if you whack it at 5 years of age or 12 years of age or 32 years of age. But the exact same damage in a 300-pound gorilla private in the military is the same damages we see in the children, and these are strokes without a doubt, and the information is on the BrainGuard MD website. You can have a look, you can see for yourself. It's sad. It's the same thing.
Why do so many public health officials, many of whom are MDs, they're doctors and went to medical school, why do they want vaccines? I mean, there's a camp out there. We didn't put them on because we wouldn't get anything done, but we've had doctors on who recommend vaccines. Why are they so supportive of these?
Well, because it's kind of by analogy. Well, the doctors don't know and what truly has gone on here, but I'll make it easy for listeners to understand. If you have forest fires running around you, and by example, polio outbreak in 1955 before Salk's vaccine came out, and polio, only about 1% of the population who were exposed to wild polio developed paralytic polio or respiratory failure or an iron lung, and some had bleeding in the back of the eyes or bleeding the brain, but only 1% had that problem. 99% of the people who got exposed to it developed immunity and got through that no problem. But we came out with this vaccine, and we gave it to everybody, and we said, congratulations, pat each other on the back as MDs and scientists and public health officials. We've eradicated polio. Well, we didn't actually eradicate polio. We eradicated the symptoms of polio that we concluded polio was before, And now the medical doctors assume that vaccines get rid of these infectious diseases. All we have done is translated forest fires for 1% of the population, took these germs, weakened them down, injected them into needles, and in attenuated, weakened form, complexed them with toxins like aluminum and mercury and squalene and other adjuvants, and injected them in people saying, we got rid of polio. We never got rid of polio. We got rid of the forest fires, but now we've injected chronic brush fires into 100% of the population because the measures I see, whether you get an adverse diagnosis or not, brain damage to learning disabilities to ADHD to Gulf War, Gardasil, even dementia in the adults, is causing the exact same damages that was there during polio epidemic, but it's now not causing profound paralysis that we put polio label to it and we can't find the bug. It was never the germ. It was the body's response to it. So we think we're doing a good job, but we've just translated things, and that's the problem.
I mean, what would Jonas Salk say to you today if he just heard this statement?
Jonas Salk, unfortunately, and as every other MD out there, because the training I have, all of these medical doctors have, and I know what their understanding is, and I know where the few gaps that need to be fulfilled in their understanding to all of a sudden the lights come on and their face goes ashen gray, and they go, oh, my God. And I've done this to family physicians in practice for 30 years. I go in their office, say, look, I'll show you this, 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 and you understand this point, this point, this point. I'm not making anything up. The tools I'm using are the standard clinical tools they all have. They just don't know what's before their very eyes. And when the lights come on, they go, oh, my gosh, I recognize what that is. These are ischemic strokes. And, oh, my gosh, I've seen these patients through my whole career. I've caused that. They can't argue it. So Jonas Salk today couldn't argue it, but go back further to Louis Pasteur. His whole Pasteurian germ theory was the greatest scientific silliness pushed against mankind in the history of medicine, because if germs truly are causing disease, George, then someone should tell us, why does penicillin kill you? It's not a germ. How does peanut butter kill you? It's not a germ. How does asbestos induce mesothelioma cancers in the lung? Well, asbestos is not a germ either. Clearly, it's something the body's immune system or physiology is doing in response to foreign things put in it. It's not the germs, and these vaccines are the epitome of repetitive injections of foreign things in the body.
I know some people, Andrew, who will not shake hands. They're so germophobic. They will not put their hands on an escalator rail. They just won't do any of that. Is that foolish, or are they being smart?
Well, I guess if you're Howard Hughes, it was probably a good idea. You can pass on some, we call them fomites, where germs can live for a bit of time outside of the body, and they can pass from person to person. Some germs are passed by droplets, by coughing, but cleanliness is indeed important for mitigating the transmission of communicable diseases in the environment. So certainly washing your hands, covering your mouth when you cough, but the bottom line is, and this is the very most important point, George, if I can't get any other point through clearly this evening, I have to make this point clearly. And this is what really flattens, doesn't just say vaccines are causing all these damages for us in silent ways, it flattens the entire Western medical model. Because when you can conclusively show to the world, not just with science, here, everybody, look and see for yourself, that every vaccination from the infant DTP, MMR, Hep A, Hep B, Gardasil, anthrax, the whole gamut, when they are all inducing the exact same measurable neurological damages in response to vaccination, irrespective of what disease label comes out from infancy to adulthood, then it's not the germs doing this. It's a generic response in the human body, because those responses and those measures were present for smallpox that killed people, for polio that killed people, for rubella that caused birth defects in the pre-vaccine era. So this says germs are not causing diseases, and that means we're doing the wrong thing with vaccinations. We're not addressing the cause of the disease. We're pushing that disease in us, and we're causing brain and body damages from impaired blood flow to all of us. It's a hypoxic state.
What happens if they mandate mass vaccinations?
Well, if they do that now, what they're planning to do for the fall, turning all our public school systems, I'm afraid, into this mass vaccination program,
yep,
they are going to cause here's the next step here. Once I knew what the measures were, and I knew these girls were dying from Gardasil, and they said that's coincidental. Well, some of the girls have had serious adverse reactions, including waxing and waning paralyses. I went in and looked at the measure before and after, and I said, wait a minute here. These teen girls are showing the exact same measurable neurological damages in response to the Gardasil vaccine in some of them who have died. That if I hold on the phone here, I knew it wasn't Gardasil. It's not the germs causing this. And I also realized that the damages are additive with each vaccine for each damage they receive. So I said, well, let me go back and look at the pictures of these girls who are having serious adversity from their infancy. And sure enough, after every childhood vaccine, the damages I was measuring was after the DTP vaccine. And again,
jeez,
the second one, it adds up at each time. So these girls who are dying and having adversity from Gardasil are the girls who did not develop autism or ADHD or learning disabilities in the childhood. The Gardasil finished the job.
We'll be back in a moment. We'll take phone calls next as we continue our dialogue with Dr. Robin Falkov and Dr. Andrew Molden. Well, next hour, Jane Burgermeister joins us. She has recently filed criminal charges against the World Health Organization and some other agencies. Next hour will be our last hour of our vaccine special program. Last hour of the program tonight, we'll have open lines. When we come back, we'll take your phone calls with Dr. Robin Falkov, Dr. Andrew Molden on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Molden, what got you to look into vaccines? Did something happen to your family or anything like that?
No, not at all, actually. In fact, nobody in my family has any health problems related to this whatsoever.
Good.
The thing is very simple. I'm a physician. I'm a scientist. I know the rules and laws of brain development and how you can derail it. And once I knew that and I saw before me that, oh, my gosh, these are strokes and these are damages, and it's not just one person in 10,000. It's pretty much one in one. We're all being harmed, and it's additive over time. So that's frightening. So I didn't realize it was vaccines at first. I just realized, wait a minute here, we're causing impaired blood flow damage to the brain. And then it just slowly emerged when I was able to measure what I was looking at. Then I could actually go see, holy smokes, it's across the board. And that really frightened me. So then it was a matter of, now you have truth. What do you do with it? Well, it's before United States Federal Circuit Courts right now. They cannot deny this. And unfortunately, as you're well aware, the court system, it has not much to do with truth as it does to do with who can spin the best story. So
true.
Truth now is self-evident. People can see it for themselves, and we'll stop this calamity by standing up together, because whether you're a grandmother, whether you're a grade 6 student, or whether you're a person who has an MD, PhD, you can see this for yourself, and you cannot escape the conclusion, because it's as simple as your hand is not burnt, you just put it on the hot stove, and now it's burnt. They couldn't see the burns, they didn't feel the pain, but now they can see it in their own lives and their own families going back 50 years if they have to.
Let's go to Bonita, California, west of the Rockies. Colleen, go ahead.
Hi, Dr. Molden. I lost my 11-year-old daughter to a childhood cancer, a Wilms tumor, and I wondered if you know of any connections between the SV40 contamination of polio vaccines and childhood cancer.
Yes. Yes, there definitively is. The SV40 was a contaminant that came from the African green monkey kidney cells that we're using back some time ago. However, the bottom line is here to understand this, because I don't have the full data set now, but now that I know what to measure, the damages I see in terms of the facial imaging that I can now do, which reflects impairments of end blood vessel territories, and by analogy, your fingertips, your nose tips, your toe tips, and ear tips are most likely to get frostbite because they're end blood vessel territories. Whenever you impair flow in any riverbed system, the areas furthest from the flow source, the weakest trickling streams downstream, are the first areas to dry up, whether it's in the Mississippi River or whether it's in the blood vessels in your body. And when you're causing damages by immune system hyperstimulation or by loss of stability of blood flow, it's an electrostatic problem, then all the areas in the body where they're end vascular territories, kind of like the blood vessels that go to your fingertips and nose tips, these areas have impaired oxygenation. And when they have impairments of oxygen, whether it's to neurological cables or whether it's to organs in the body, then the cells in those areas will be functioning in a low oxygen state, and those states can induce a person to start making genetic anomalies in terms of the cells in those areas, and that become turned on cancer genes and become cancerous. It can create antibodies in your body that goes against your own tissue, because human immune system does not distinguish between cells that are misfunctioning because of a virus, a fungus, a bacteria, a heavy metal, a pathogen, or lack of oxygen to the tissue. The body says, wait a minute, this tissue is malfunctioning, so the body will create antibodies against your own tissue to try to clean it up. And so autoimmune disorders can also come from this, but cancers, I have now seen this, and I've got, this wasn't my first area to look at. I was looking at the neurodevelopmental disorders, but I've got many cases where cancer has emerged, brain and bone cancers in children who are also showing the same ischemic impaired blood flow damages to the facial structures I see, because the damages are happening here. It's a systemic problem throughout the whole body. And by analogy, if you dump a million rubber duckies at the head of the Mississippi River, where they get lodged downstream in the end bottlenecks is random from person to person. But because all of us across our entire age, from infants to adults, have some common bottlenecks in our nervous system, I see the same neurological damages across the board. When I see that happening after vaccination, concordant with the development of some cancers, this can very well be the same problem emerging. But SV40 did create cancers, but more specifically, this aluminum in these darn vaccines. Aluminum is a really bad problem here, because we find even in the veterinarian cases where dogs have been vaccinated that they have the sarcomas, the cancers in the connective tissue. At the centers of those tumors are the blue little specks that go from aluminum that the body cannot get rid of, because aluminum has a real high positive charge, and it's hard for the body to carry high positive charge things in the blood flow, and that constantly calls the immune system to the area, and it's the act of the non-specific immune system constantly being called to the area that's leading to the tissue damages and the changes that lead to cancers in some respects, as well as the neurological damages or type 1 diabetes or chronic fatigue or fibromyalgia. It's all the same process, different triggers, but these things can lead to that. So, yes, that's quite possible.
It makes you wonder, Andrew, if these people at Big Pharma even know what they're doing.
I truly think that some, those in the know, this is a loaded question, they think they're doing the greater good. That's simply as that. They recognized all along that these vaccines can sometimes cause, they give these crazy, pull it out of the hat numbers, like 1 in 1 million adverse response.
Yeah, yeah.
But they don't know what to measure. So they don't know what they don't know. And like the analogy before, if they don't measure death from outcome or neurological damage before or after, they can say anything safe. Because even this past January, I was in court in Fairfax, Washington, in a vaccine exemption case where parents were separating from each other. The father wanted to vaccinate, and the mother did not. And Dr. Neil Halsey, the past president of the American Pediatric Association, and he's the Bloomberg School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins University expert for vaccine safety. He's been saying these things are safe for the last 20 years. Well, he was the expert for the father's side that basically said, no, we've done all this stuff, they're safe. And I was called for the expert for the mother's side who did not want to vaccinate their child. I put my evidence forward to the court. The judge had 5 grandchildren. My evidence, you don't have to use science to go refute it. You can see it for yourself. And even Dr. Halsey, we had him on the stand. Now, this is the past president of the American Pediatric Association. I showed my evidence, what people can now see right now. If you go to the BrainGuardMD.com website, you can see what I'm talking about. But we presented my evidence, and Dr. Halsey is sitting there. He receives the information, and he can see, he can't deny this. So when he was on stand, I asked the lawyer from our side, would you mind asking Dr. Halsey under oath, has he ever measured these neurological features Dr. Molden showing before and after vaccines? Because he says they're all safe. He has to say no. So they don't know what they don't know, but they have no incentive to go look for it, because looking for what you're doing is causing a problem. You're flattening your entire industry. There's a reason why the American Pediatric Association looks like the Crystal Cathedral around a moat. It's paid for by pharmacy. They don't want to stop doing this, but they truly think they're doing the greater good here. But there's some people who know it's bad. That's why they passed vaccine laws that made it you can't sue them. You have to go through courts. That is basically a no-fault insurance program that provides manufacturer escape liability clauses. That's a problem for everybody. They knew there was a problem. They didn't realize its magnitude. And now we can show it to them. And they're going to be slow to pick it up. I think Winston Churchill said it the best, George. He said, all too often, a man comes running into a room to trip over the truth, only to get up, brush himself off, and scurry away like nothing's happened. That's what's going on.
So true. Let's go to Dave in Park, Kansas, first-time caller. Hi, Dave. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi. This is Father Dave out in Park, this area here.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a ministry that I work with quite a few, both elderly and disabled folks, that all of them are on either Social Security disability or just plain Social being an ordained minister, I have about 10 years experience in hospital pharmacy.
Okay.
But what I would like to know from your panel is that I have been receiving some communication from folks that I have no reason to doubt that I have worked with over the years that are telling me that when, not if, this mandatory vaccination program comes along, that these elderly folks and also disabled folks that are getting disability benefits, if they refuse to take these vaccines, then I haven't seen the actual documents, I will say, but I believe what these folks in the medical institutions are telling me, that they have been seeing documents and talking to folks saying that these folks will get their benefits stripped from them if they refuse to take the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, to me, rather an ominous.
Well, I agree. Let's get the panel's idea. Robin, that's indeed very possible pressure, isn't it?
Definitely. And what I would recommend that you go to Barbara Lowe Fisher's website for the National Vaccine Information Center and find out what your rights are and look into what the rights are for the individuals in your particular state. And then you can learn how you can protect yourself within that.
Elderly folks are going to get the short end of the stick in any
definitely
health plan, aren't
definitely
they? That's a true concern. Andrew, elderly people generally like vaccines, or they take them. Tell me why. they think they feel safe.
They're terrorized.
I think the problem is that they've been the longest indoctrinated into you give all of your decision making powers to these gentlemen with degrees in the walls
and trust them
who don't know. It's a trust that has been earned over the years. But the bottom line is here: dementia, which is one person in 15 over the age of 65, and one in 8 over 85. Autism, one in 87. Specific learning disabilities, one child in 6 United States. This is your country's data. Attention deficit, 15% of the children, 1% sudden death and death, 1 in 450 type 1 diabetes. It's all the same problem. It's impairment on blood flow. And so the elderly will be harmed by these things. But more profoundly, what they're planning to do with this repeat bang-bang vaccination in the fall, those who will be most adversely affected in silent ways, and we will ideally have my IMAM-12 imaging system up there for the world to go see and look and see for themselves so we can measure this. We'll hopefully have the imaging done by then. If they don't believe us and they don't go to our website and look and learn for themselves, then they will walk into this trap, because the bottom line is those who will be worst harmed in silent, acute, waxing and waning out of the form will be those who have received the most vaccines over a lifetime, which is why you will find most adversities will be in the 40 years and younger, because they've received the most vaccinations over the lifespan, because the damages are additive and sequential with each vaccine, like being punched in the head. And the elderly people are walking into dementia. This is what it's going to do.
Eau Claire, Wisconsin, let's go to you, east of the Rockies. Hi, Tim.
Top of the morning, George. How you doing?
Sure thing.
Fascinating show as usual. Hey, Dr. Nolan, I'm wondering, you know, in listening to your talk tonight, you're throwing out all these supposed facts and all this data that you have seen. However, do you have any peer review data to back up what you say? For example, can you provide some data about a population? In let's say like modern times, like now, who haven't gotten vaccines and who do not have all these symptoms and all these problems that vaccinated people say that you claim have. I'm 38 years old, and you know, I had the whole range of vaccines, and I don't know a single person who has had vaccines who's got autism, who's got any of these problems that you're talking about. Do you have any peer review data to back up what you say? I tell you what, I listened to a guy named Dr. Dean Adell. I think, George, do you know who he is?
Yeah, he comes on the show a lot.
Right. And if you want to get him fired up, you talk about about vaccines and about how you know people will say that they shouldn't vaccinate their children. And honestly, doctor, he would tear you up. He would rip you up one side and down the other. And he's a doctor as well. So who do we believe?
Yeah, so that's great. So you believe not me, you believe no one else, you believe your own God-given senses of being able to see, hear, and look. And so, again, I give it very clearly for you. If you do not know what to measure, you cannot say anything is safe or not. That's point one. And all these diagnostic endpoints, whether it is chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, Gulf War syndrome, ADHD, learning disability, seizure disorder, encephalitis, moya, Kawasaki, you can go on any label you want to, when all of these labels are potential emergent adversities from vaccination, and you cannot see that emerging within hours and days of the vaccination by the diagnostic label. What you can show, and what you can now see for yourself, and you go look, you can see that you're being harmed, but you're being harmed in a way that all end organ systems is being harmed by impaired blood flow. Peer-reviewed journals and articles, this was called the Bordet phenomena in 1892. In 1903, it was called the Arthus reaction. You can go Google and look at these things up. We knew that these foreign things injected in the body were causing thrombo, meaning like clotting, hemorrhagic bleeding phenomena. Dr. Hans Selye, a Canadian endocrinologist from McGill, he's published all kinds of papers on this and found that irrespective of what was injecting in the body of animals or otherwise, it was inducing exactly the same damages in the organs, and that told him there's something generic in the human body doing this. In the also medical literature peer-reviewed as well, you can go look this up, and again, this is all on my BrainGuardMD.com website. There's something called the Santorelli-Schwarzman phenomena. We don't know how or why it happens, but we know by repeat vaccination it leads to impairments of blood flow and hemorrhagic phenomena. The Advisory Council on Immunizations and Practice recognize that if you have a reaction at the injection site where there's black and swelling, we call it induration, and it's painful for a couple weeks, that's a complete 100% contraindication for that individual to ever receive that vaccination again for at least 10 years, because we know a repeat vaccination should kill them. But we don't know what we don't know. We don't know how these things happen. But this is a type 4 hypersensitivity response. It's all peer-reviewed and published. You can go back and look in the literature. Dr. Melvin Nisley, K-N-I-S-L-E-Y, was on the front page of Life magazine in 1930 showing these problems existed from all these infectious diseases. It's impairment of blood flow. They didn't know how it happened. But so irrespective of how it's happening in physiology, I don't even need to explain that anymore, because all I need to do is show you your hand is not burnt. You put it on the stove element, you bring it back, it's burnt. You do not need peer-reviewed, randomized, placebo-controlled, double-blind trials to go convince you what you see with your very eyes is not real. Because if you use scientific methods and statistical probabilities and diagnostic endpoint labels to refute what you can see for your own eyes, then nothing's going to help you convince that, because you're confirming your a priori hypothesis, and that's part of the problem. You don't need science to see this.
Today, the FDA came out with the stronger recommendations. Children who take arthritis medicine, some of the big brands, are more at risk now for cancer and even death. It never ends, Andrew and Robin. It seems like these drugs come out, and years later, they find out they're no good, or they can cause serious harm or injury.
Well, and what the individual needs to do, and that's a major problem, everybody has to start taking responsibility, especially those of us that have access to the Internet. You can go to the website for the drug manufacturer and look up simple things. You don't have to read the pharmacology. You can look up what is a warning, what is a side effect, what is a contraindication, which means it's against indication for the individual. Those little things will give you insight, and patients have got to have better communication with their physicians and not be intimidated when they're trying to report what's going on with themselves.
Andrew, what's your website?
BrainGuardMD.com, and that's that puts the information out there. But I've also I've done my work. I've got the forensic evidence. It's there before the courts right now. They will drag their heels for the next 4 years. So I just got to the point where I've done all that work, and in the process now I'm just going out there and helping the children. So it's BrainGuardMD.com is my main website. VacTruth.com is attached to that. But I'm with a not-for-profit. I'm helping these children, and that's BrightStepsForward.com.
We'll be back in a moment with Jane Berg. Meister joining us now on Coast to Coast AM.